What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Ultimate Patriot / Doctor Football Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote this evening from my real live medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me, as always, is the CEO of Hedge Better himself, the man, the myth, the legend, Justin Fine. Justin, what is going on, my man? What's the good word tonight?
Well, you know what? We jinxed it from the last episode. We were talking about all that warm weather, right? I think the cold weather's finally catching up to us a little bit. Although I did hear it's going to be what, like 70 at the end of this week
for Halloween? Yeah, don't speak too soon, bro. Look at that forecast. It's going to be like 80 degrees on Halloween.
Yeah.
It's going to be in the 70s the next 2 days.
That's what I heard. So who knows? Maybe a couple of warm days. But yeah, man, everything's good over here. How's things going at the medical office?
The things are always going at the medical office, Justin. There's never any shortage of business. We're on the front lines fighting every day, fighting against insurance companies, fighting for our patients' health every day, and it never ends.
But it is
a pleasure. I will say that. All right, but nobody is here to listen to me pontificate about the healthcare system. This is a football podcast, and we are going to talk some football tonight. We have an awesome roster of topics. Finally, great victory to talk about after losing six in a row in Foxborough on Sunday. And just so many angles I think we can break this game down from the Pat side, from the Jets side, looking at the coaches, injury to Drake May. There's a lot to get into. Let's just dive right in. What do you say, my man?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into it.
All right, we're going to start with the kickoff. That is the opening take that sets the table for the rest of the podcast. And Justin, I'm going to begin with this. Fun is right now probably the best you can hope for where this franchise is right now. I think we all know they're not contending for a Super Bowl. So if you're a Patriots fan, you have to go down there. You have to enjoy, I think, the experience of just watching the competition and in savoring the moments like they got on Sunday in Foxborough with the Patriots and the Jets, because we haven't had many of those. I'm walking out of the stadium on Sunday after the game, and it was just such a great atmosphere. And I hear someone say how they're upset the Patriots won because they're going to affect their draft position. And Justin, that is the first thing we're going to talk about today. This drives me crazy. Let me say this. You are nuts if you're a Patriots fan and you don't want this team to win. Now, you can only fill, Justin, so many holes in one offseason. And you have to ask yourself, how many one or two or three win teams make big jumps the next season? And usually the answer is not that many, because if you're that bad, it becomes a multi-year rebuild. Do Patriots fans really want to emerge from the last 2 years and still be 2 or 3 years away? Of course not. You want this team to win. If they are winning, that means the coach is developing. That means the young players are developing. Guys like Christian Ellis, Kayshon Booty, Vidarian Lowe, Benjamin Brown, the center. These guys are getting better if the Patriots are winning. And you want that to happen if you're a Patriots fan. I am so firmly, Justin, in the camp that I don't care about the draft position of this team next year. I don't want to go and be able to get the number one tank a season, right? Why? So I can get the next Bryce Young. I can get the next Tony Mandarich, the next Jamarcus Russell, the next, there's 1,000 guys you can name, litany of draft busts that have happened. It is the history of the draft. It is the history of this league. There is absolutely no reason to tank. Even the best top prospects are 50-50 at best. They already, the Patriots right now, have the quarterback. They don't need to tank to get the quarterback. Everything else you can find anywhere else in the draft, Patriots fans should want this team to win. And I'll say one last thing before I pass the baton to you, my man, which is the irony of this whole thing is that the dynasty we just experienced, at what point out of all those great teams that they had, did they ever tank, right? To build any of those great teams. This whole dynasty was built, okay, with guys from up and down the draft, free agents, guys filling roles, a six-round quarterback, linebackers, running backs, cornerbacks from everywhere. So why do people think that they need to tank to build a good team? It's lunacy. You need this team to win. You want these players players to develop. You should be rooting for the Patriots over the next few weeks. Justin, your thoughts?
Well, you should be rooting for them. And not only that, you should be rooting, I think, for them to win games that are feasible and reasonable to want them to win, right? Like, I think we've been pretty practical, pretty matter of fact in saying that, look, this is not a super talented team. This is not a team that's capable of winning 10, 11, 12 games. This is not a team that's going to compete for a Super Bowl. But this is a team that coming into this past weekend is definitely better than what they've played, definitely better than what they've showed, right? And I think all that Patriots fans should want at this point is for them to go out and to compete and win games that they have a chance to compete and win against. I think we have to be realistic. I don't think we're sitting here, you know, all ticked off if they get tuned up by the Kansas City Chiefs or if they go into, you know, Detroit and get their butts kicked, right? What we want is for them to be competitive and win games that they should win. That Miami game, that Seattle game, some of these games that are upcoming on their schedule, right? Those are games that we should be able to expect this team to have a chance to win it when they step in the field. And I think that to me is the big thing, having realistic expectations and, to your point, wanting this team to go out there and win and compete in games that they're fully capable of.
Absolutely. And if you told me right now that the Patriots were going to win 6, 7, 8 games this year, that they were going to end the season hot, I would be thrilled about that.
Yeah.
Even if it means they're drafting like 17th instead of first, I see no value in dumping, because if by definition, if the Patriots have won that many games coming down the stretch, that means they are developing players,
yep,
they're becoming a better team, and they're going into next year in a much better position to be a competitive football team.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree completely. I mean, look, you know, this team right now, there really are, you know, a couple of coin flips away from being a team with a completely different record. Like, look, like they should have beat Jacksonville. They should have beat Miami. They should have beat Seattle, right? Like, this is a team that we could look at right now, and they're what, 2-6? Like, this is a team that could easily be like 5-3, or should, you could even say should be 5-3. If you think
about
it,
I don't know if I'd
go
that far, but how about this? If they had just won one of those two games against Miami,
it's
or
a different
Seattle
season.
They're 3-5.
Right.
And that's a totally different feel. And you look at the upcoming schedule, and to the point you just made where you said, oh, well, you know, you wouldn't expect them to beat Detroit or Kansas City. They don't play really many games where I would say that they don't have a chance to at least be competitive in coming down the stretch. The only team they play, and they play them twice, is Buffalo. They play them once in Foxborough, once in Buffalo. Those are going to be tough games.
Right.
However, it should be mentioned, they did beat Buffalo in Foxborough last year. The remaining games beyond that, Titans, Bears, Rams, Dolphins, Colts, Cardinals, Chargers. Where on that list is a team that they couldn't potentially beat?
Yeah, I agree. And that's totally the point, is like this team is starting to turn the corner a little bit. And look, when this season first started, I think we both said, like, you know, there's really not too many games that I'd go out there and expect the Patriots to win or, you know, even potentially compete in. But I think that's changed. I think the Drake May era has begun. And I think that's changed my expectations for this team moving forward throughout the rest of their schedule.
We're going to get into May and his performance in a little bit. But don't you agree with me, Justin, that if May didn't get hurt in the second quarter of this game, I would almost go so far as to say this might have been a one-sided Patriots victory.
It definitely could have been a one-sided Patriots victory, which I think that would have just been the cherry on top for the Patriots at this point in the Jets skid this year to just go into Foxborough and just get their clocks cleaned. Like, that would have been the cherry on top. But obviously still, they were able to get the job done. But yeah, when Drake May was in this game, it really wasn't looking super competitive.
They looked like the Patriots looked like a better team.
Yeah, they did.
At the start of this game. I mean, they come out and the Patriots score on that first drive. Terrific run by Drake May.
Yep.
May made a few great passes, which were dropped, by the way. We're going to get into the receiver room a little later. And then the Jets get a gift touchdown that was more or less handed to them by terrible refereeing.
Yeah.
Okay. And if that doesn't happen, honestly, the Patriots could have gotten off to a lead in this game and almost controlled this game. And who knows what happens if May doesn't go down.
Right. Right. Exactly. It was, you know, but, and I texted you this during the game. It was nice to see Jacoby Brissett do what I think we brought him here to do, which is be a competent backup, right? It was to bridge the gap initially, but then the goal was, we knew it was a short-term gap, and the reason for him being here was to be a competent backup, where if something were to happen to Drake May, we could send him out there. And he looked, Jacoby Brissett looked better, you know, coming in to relieve Drake May from injury than I think he had in any of his starts this entire year. But that's what we want. That's what we want. A guy who can come in off the bench and help us, you know, compete and win games.
Absolutely. And when we were complaining about Brissett a few weeks ago, don't take that as us not liking Jacoby Brissett as a player. I love Jacoby Brissett as a player for what he is, which is a competent backup quarterback, an excellent backup quarterback, probably one of the best backup quarterbacks in this league, but not a starting quarterback. And Brissett completely validated on Sunday that that really is his best use in his best role. Yeah. He is a great backup quarterback. You don't want Jacoby Brissett starting for you, you know, 15, 16, 17 games a year. That's not going to go well. We saw what that looked like. It was ugly. But this guy coming in off the bench or coming in as a spot starter, he is one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that was a breath of fresh air because, you know, if we had brought in Jacoby and that game had slipped away from us and he just looked awful, I mean, it would have just been, again, just insult to injury, no pun intended. But I was glad to at least see him, you know, come in and look capable.
Do you think that, I mean, I would say I thought from what we saw from May when he was actually in there, that he actually looked really good as well. Like I thought May looked terrific for the quarter and a half that he played. And I think that what I would say is that what we've seen from May, certainly in the first two games and then again this Sunday, completely validates that he is clearly multiple levels or tiers above what Jacoby Brissett is. And that is not a knock on Jacoby Brissett. It's just that Brissett is a borderline starter and May clearly is just way above that already.
Yeah, and I think May's athleticism and I guess just his physical gifts were on display this weekend before he got hurt. And that's something that I think, you know, we've talked about it, but I wonder if that's something that gets a little overlooked is, you know, you talk about the athleticism and playmaking abilities of the Jaden Daniels and the Caleb Williams of the world, but Drake May is very capable as a physical specimen back there.
Next generation stats, he almost hit 21 miles an hour on that run, the touchdown run. I mean, he was flying.
Turned the Jets on. Yeah.
He turned the Jets on and he has that athleticism. So I think, you know, I've heard a little bit of talk this week about that's why you can't play May because he got hurt. I think that, I don't know if you have any thoughts about that. I kind of feel like, first of all, the thing we were all afraid of was him getting hit in the pocket. And the line actually has been playing well since May gets in there. And I think May gets some of the credit for that because his skill set makes the whole thing work better. And that includes the offensive line play. Defenses have to respect him in many different ways, his arm, his mobility, and it makes the linemen look better because of that. But it wasn't him sitting in the pocket and getting crushed that got him hurt. It was him running out of the pocket and getting clocked from behind. And I think in a sense, Justin, what I would say to anyone that says that this proves that May shouldn't be playing, to me, it's the complete opposite. This proves is exactly why Drake May has to play because he has to learn to get down. I do agree with Gerard Mayo's comment after the game that May needs to learn to protect himself better. I mean, you got the first down. You have to get down and slide down before you get hit.
You do. But you know what? Again, like just like a lot of things that we talk about in this podcast, the context is super important, right? You know, in this situation, you look at Drake May getting hurt. And it's very easy to sit there and say, oh, you know, you gotta protect yourself. You gotta go down a little bit sooner. But by the same token, you know, just to play devil's advocate, I mean, you know, we've talked about this guy potentially, hopefully being like a Josh Allen type of prototype, right? Between like his physical gifts and maybe his potential talent level. Like, you know, guys like that, we give them all this extra credit in validation for their ability to you know, be physical and break tackles and finish the end of a play, right? It's like, I understand it too. I understand. I get the being smart part, but I also get the, hey, you're a physical specimen and you're looking to do something a little bit extra.
Yeah. And I mean, to that point, and I'm going to contradict myself a little bit here, but you can't have it both ways. Exactly. Either too, right? Like if we're going to laud him for that touchdown run when he didn't go down,
right,
turned on the Jets and made an amazing play, then you can't criticize him, I guess, for, you know, trying to squeeze every ounce out of that 18-yard run and taking right. a hit and then ultimately not working out. You can't have it both ways.
Exactly. And you know what? If he doesn't get hurt, you probably sit there and you go, oh, look at that physical run. And he was able to tack on a few extra yards at the end of that play. Like, you know what I mean? So it all comes down to the context of what happened. Obviously, in this situation, it was kind of a late hit. He got...
Do you think it was a late hit? Or should it have been a penalty? Because it was unflagged.
It was unflagged. The thing is, it was slightly late, but I understand the fact that the runner didn't give himself up. Drake May didn't give himself up, so it opens up, you know, the possibility of a slightly late hit. I'm okay with no flag, to be honest.
Okay. See, I thought it should have been a penalty.
But it's 50-50. It could go either way.
It was 50-50. Right. It was one of those ones where, like, look, the speed of the game being what it is, it would have been a little unfair to the defender probably
right.
to throw the flag there. But at the same time, we've all seen things 10,000 times less egregious get flagged pretty much every week in this league.
Definitely.
And I think based on the standard that they in the precedent the league has set and what they're calling roughing and how they handle these situations, then yes, it should have been a flag.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have had obviously no problem if it was called a flag. I don't think it's egregious that it wasn't.
I can agree with that. I don't think it was egregious. I just personally think I would have thrown a penalty, a flag. I will also say this, Justin, and let's not kid ourselves. Any time in the history of this league, up until probably the last 3, 4, 5 years, Drake May would have finished that game. Like this is all a new thing. There is by all reporting, he wanted to go back in the game, and the league, the independent neurotrauma person, prevented him from getting back in the game.
Yeah.
That's a whole new thing. Guys, you know, back in the 90s, in the early 2000s, they were getting hit like this 5 times a game and nothing was ever done about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you wonder if you're going to start to see a trend of players hiding these injuries and trying to, you know, pass the buck off and say, oh, it's my shoulder. It's, you know, it's not my head. You know what I mean? Because
they're already doing it. Look at Josh Allen a few weeks ago.
Right, right.
Against Houston, he was clearly concussed and somehow managed to stay out there.
Right. So that's the other thing. It really comes down to like this weird judgment zone where it's like you see some people that stay in games and you're like, okay, well, that's interesting. And then some dudes get pulled for concussion protocol and you're like, okay, well, that was ticky tacky. So it all just depends, you know?
It depends. And I mean, I can say as a physician, I mean, part of the challenge of this is that the symptoms from a concussion are generally subjective.
Right.
So if a guy really wants to BS his way through the evaluation, unless he's really concussed, like, you know, Tua Tagovailoa having the posturing is objective. You can't hide that. Someone that doesn't know where they are or when it is, that's objective. You can't hide that. That's the minority of these cases. A lot of times it's headaches and dizziness and maybe a little unsteadiness that if a guy really wants to hide or mask or explain away, he probably can.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But you know what? Look, it all worked out better safe than sorry. You got him out of there. You got him a little extra rest and protection, and you still were able to go out and win. But you know what? I think moving forward, I think we'll hopefully see a little bit more. Maybe I don't want to say resiliency because it's not like it was his decision,
right?
But you know, I think he. I don't think that's anything indicative of a problem with his toughness or his.
I hope not, because I don't want to sound like I don't lack compassion or sensitivity.
Right.
But that is a thought that crossed my mind. Like, I'm like, okay, he's already going out with a concussion. It's been 2.5 games. I don't know. Would a lot of guys have played through that? Just being honest, that thought did cross my mind.
Exactly, and that goes back to the conversation that he has with, you know, the independent, you know, trauma specialist with the NFL. Like, how much of that was him maybe playing that up, or how much of it was the just that specific person on that specific day? you know?
Exactly. So let me ask you this, you know, do you think he plays this week against the Tennessee Titans? Would you play him? You know, I guess if you're really being smart, if there's any uncertainty at all, you sit him. I don't want to watch Jacoby Brissett again. You know, by all accounts, May wanted to stay in the game. I hope he will play against Tennessee, but I don't know. What's the smart play here?
Look, the smart thing to do is probably, I guess, to sit him. But I think you only sit him if necessary. I don't think you sit him just because it's the smart thing to do. I think you sit him if it's necessary to do so.
If there's like any uncertainty around right. his health, right? You sit him.
Right. Exactly.
If he's 100%, you play him. If he's 80%, you sit him.
Exactly. And look, if the reports are coming that, you know, a full week prior, the guy wanted to go back in the game, he didn't think he was that injured, then you'd hope that he's healthy enough to play the following week. But yeah, again,
it would suck if he sits, because right. I do feel like that obviously this is a game they should win. And I believe if May was healthy and out there the way he's progressing, I feel like they would have a terrific chance to win this game with Drake May.
Exactly. And then look, you know, even 1-6, 2-6, you're in a hole. You really aren't going to be able to do much with that, you know, the rest of the season. But you chip your way back in. You get to 3, 4, 5 wins, you know, 4-6, 5-6. Like, the season is completely different, especially when you look at the – and again, I'm not saying this team's playoff bound, but you look at the standings and you know, 500 is going to be enough to get you the 7 seed probably.
Well, let me ask you this. Their next three games are the Titans, the Bears, and the Rams. Is it inconceivable that if Drake May is healthy that they win all three of those games?
Not at all.
The Rams are at home. The Bears, you know – they're having their own issues, and the Titans are probably one of the only teams in this league that are objectively worse than the Patriots through 8 weeks. So, you know, I think you could easily sweep those three games.
You could. And
then with Drake May.
Exactly. Yeah. And now if you're sitting there 5-6, whole different second half of the year.
Totally, totally different second half of the year. And I will say one more thing, just to bring this back to the original conversation, right? What this whole episode with May and the independent neuro trauma consultant really, I think, emphasizes, and this is a league-wide trend, is the importance of having a good backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, your quarterback is going to get hurt. More and more quarterbacks are getting hurt. We're seeing almost every team in the league needing their backup quarterback at some point. A lot of them getting out to their third string quarterback.
Yep.
Having a good backup quarterback is essential in today's NFL, especially with the concussion protocol rules as they are right now.
Exactly. And you don't got to look too far to find prime examples. You look at the Jets of last year, the Dolphins of this year. You could go on and on and on. All these good teams that, you know, they lose their starting quarterback, they don't have a competent backup, and it's like their season just goes down the tubes, even with a good, reasonably well-rounded roster.
You know, no question about it. So it's more important than ever now.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears a little bit, Justin, and talk a little bit about the Jets, because as much as that was just a sweet win on Sunday, I think maybe, you know, and if I'm being honest, the sweetest part of it might have been was the fact that this was the nail in the coffin of the Aaron Rodgers experiment. It is over for the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, the hype machine and all the hype surrounding this over-celebrated thing. This was the nail in the coffin. Watching the Jets implode was sweet. And I don't mean that in a one-game sense, because one game implosion happens every week in this league. Team has a bad week, they fall apart. What happened on Sunday, it really goes beyond one game. It was the complete collapse of this Jets rebuild and of the Aaron Rodgers career in New York. And I think that's what made it sweeter. 2 years of hype, okay? 2 years of hype. And what makes it even more sweet is the fact that everything the New York Jets touch turns into poison. Everything they touch. They drafted Geno Smith. He falls apart in New York. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFC right now. They bring in Sam Darnold. He's seeing ghosts in New York. Now he was the MVP potentially going into last week in Minnesota. They sign Aaron Rodgers. one of the best players in the league the last 15 years. He's absolute garbage. Blows out his ACL the first year. Can't play in his second year. Becomes an absolute bum in jet screen. They double down on Aaron Rodgers. They surround him with his friends on the field. They hire his offensive coordinator to be the OC there, even though he's a discredited coach around the league. They trade for Devontae Adams' BFF. They put absolutely every chip they possibly could muster onto the table for Aaron Rodgers, and they just lost in the most harsh and discriminating fashion possible. 2-6 yesterday. That was, I think, also a sweet part of what we saw on Sunday.
It was so sweet. And I know you just gave a pretty good recap of the last, 2 years, but just take it from the beginning of this season, everything that this team did to go all in for Aaron Rodgers, right? They beefed in their offensive line. They brought in some big names, guys like Tyrone Smith, right? To help make sure that, hey, what happened to Aaron Rodgers last year doesn't happen again this year, right? They get rid of Robert Saleh. There's rumors that there's issues with Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers. Okay, boom, they go get rid of Robert Saleh. They bring in Devontae Adams. Okay, boom, whatever. Aaron Rodgers is not only best friends in the league, but something that they needed, another offensive weapon. And each time they take another step to continue to double and triple and quadruple down, being all in on Aaron Rodgers, it just gets progressively worse. And that is the sweet part of it. It's like every time they do something to make it better, it's like watching an old, like an old 80s cartoon where it's like, it's almost like a Tom and Jerry type of situation where it's like every time one of the characters does something they think is going to work out well, it explodes in their face, right? Like that's what we're watching in New York
Now. Let me ask you, because I was trying to think of this week and I couldn't think of another example. Maybe you can. When in the history of the NFL has a team gone all in, like so hard, all in, like full throttle, all in, and had it just so profoundly blow up in their face so definitively and so quickly? I really can't think of another example.
Well, so I don't think these two examples are maybe on par with the Aaron Rodgers situation, but they're close. And I just think it's very interesting that they all occurred roughly around the same time. And that's the Deshaun Watson and the Russell Wilson situation out in Denver. Right now, I still don't think it's as extreme as what happened with the Jets and Aaron Rodgers, but I think it goes to this larger issue where we're seeing that some of these franchises are trying to bring in these veteran quarterbacks, just assuming that they're going to pick up right where they left off in the first half of their careers. And it's not the case. And it's blowing up epically. You look at those three decisions.
You bring up the Russell Wilson situation. That's a good example.
Yeah.
And I agree. They don't quite rise to the level of the Aaron Rodgers thing.
Right.
Though they are in of themselves, epic collapses. Watson and Wilson, great examples. And you're right. They do speak to a larger trend in the league, the desperation to find the quarterback at any and all costs. You know, when you talk about Russell Wilson, remember too, he had the same coach in Denver as his head coach his first year that Aaron Rodgers had as his offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett, exactly.
Nathaniel Hackett.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting.
No, very. And it's also super interesting that Nathaniel Hackett ran out of Denver as the de facto, not even a debate, the problem with that organization. But the Jets and Aaron Rodgers are so loyal to him that that he's making big major decisions within this organization. Like, I think that's, how can you have such a difference of opinion on a guy? You know what I mean? The truth has to lie somewhere in the middle. You know
what distinguishes the Rodgers situation though from either of those two examples? And you're right in a sense, because Wilson and Watson both got bigger commitments, bigger contracts, and were paid more money, and they were both epic failures. But when have you ever seen a team make so many concessions to a star player as the Jets did to Aaron Rodgers? You're bringing in all his favorite receivers, Alan Lazard, Devontae Adams. You fired the coach. You brought in the coach he liked. You did everything you could to bend over backwards to accommodate this guy, and it still didn't work.
It still didn't work. And not only did it still not work, but But Aaron Rodgers, and I get it, you're losing. It's tough. But he doesn't look like he wants to be out there. Like he doesn't look like he's the beacon, the lighthouse in the port in the storm. You know what I mean? Like, he should be the guy after everything they've invested in him, everything they've done for him, everything that he supposedly says that he can do for this team. He should be the guy that they can lean on now more than ever to help try to right the ship. And he looks like the person who wants to have the least to do with this organization right now.
He does. And Justin, like, I'll go so far as to say this. If you want to sit here and speculate about why this didn't work, and we said this last week and 2 weeks ago. You can go back and pull the podcast. The problem with this whole thing in New York is the fact that Aaron Rodgers isn't that good anymore. People want to talk about Rodgers' attitude. They can talk about the coaching, fire the coach. There's a million things you can point at as to why it didn't work. But at the root of it all is the fact that Aaron Rodgers is a 41-year-old quarterback who is not fully invested, who is coming off a major injury, and whose skill set has experienced a rapid decline. He is not a great quarterback anymore. He might not even be a good quarterback anymore. And that, above all, is why this whole thing was destined to fail, no matter what they did.
And I agree with that totally. I will say, though, there is a deeper issue within this organization other than just Aaron Rodgers, because just the same way that we talked about, I mean, look, I think if it's fair for us to say that the Patriots were better than their record in a better team than we were seeing, right? I think it's extremely fair to say that this Jets team, even with Aaron Rodgers at like 50 or 60% of what he was just a few years ago, this is still a team that's better than 2-6. Like, this is a team that should at least be finding ways to compete in games, even if they're not as good as people thought. There is something fundamentally wrong within this organization. And I think it goes beyond Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers may be one of the biggest contributing factors, but there's something else going on here, because they should be better.
Well, it's the ownership. It starts with the owner. He's been the consistent theme through multiple failed regimes, multiple failed quarterbacks, multiple failed coaches. It's Woody Johnson is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, well, so there you go. Woody Johnson's part of the problem. I wonder if, you know, I feel like there may be a culture issue in that locker room too. I think there's a lot of contributing factors, and at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers is not good enough to mask them all, like maybe the ownership was hoping.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that kind of player anymore. No. And he never was. I honestly don't think it was ever going to work in New York. And I don't think it was going to work from the beginning before he hurt himself. And I think when he hurt himself last year, that was just sort of like the icing on the cake for this all falling apart, because whatever diminishing skill set he had, okay, the diminishment was accelerated by the injury to his Achilles, which I think affected his mobility, and the fact that he didn't play for a year. I think it's hard for any player to come back from a year where they don't play. But a 41-year-old guy to go a year without playing and then to try and get and step back on an NFL field and be what he once was, I think that's almost damn near impossible for a 25-year-old.
Oh, no. I think that's very difficult to do. I also don't want to let the Jets defense kind of skate by here, because this is a defense that we were all told was going to be a top, if not the top defense in the NFL coming into this year. And they have severely underperformed too. So there is really just an overall sense of underperforming coming from this entire organization, from the talent, from the top down, from the coaching to the offense to the defense, their star players, everybody has been disappointing.
Absolutely, Justin. But what do you think Robert Saleh is thinking when he watches that yesterday? I mean, he's probably laughing his ass off when he watches the way that Jets defense play and how far, fast and far they've fallen off. He watches them take multiple delay of games, including one on a 2-point conversion that was apparently on purpose, by the way. Have you ever seen a team burn all their timeouts in the first quarter? And it ended up being relevant to how this game played out, because at halftime, the Jets couldn't stop the clock and the Patriots were able to run out the clock. The Jets, the, the Jets made so many mistakes in this game. And yes, if I'm Robert Saleh and I'm looking at the way this defense played and I'm looking at all those mistakes, I'm laughing my ass off right now. Yeah. The fact that I got fired and everything is turned into a worse mess. This was the first time, Justin, ever in 7-8 games, Jerod Mayo actually had the coaching experience advantage for once.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. I mean, look, it showed, like, the team looked very undisciplined. The Jets have been super undisciplined, but Robert Saleh, he has to be sitting there, like you said, with the biggest, you know what, eating grin in his face.
Yep.
Just feeling very vindicated because he knew that he was not the problem in New York. And I think a lot of us knew that he wasn't the problem in New York. He wasn't the solution, but he wasn't the problem. And he got canned as if he was the problem.
The problem was Aaron Rodgers is the problem. It doesn't matter who coached the team, going and lopping the coach's head off. And when he was actually a positive, a net positive for what that franchise was, it was not the solution. It made them worse. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm watching them in the first half and they're not running the ball.
I couldn't believe it.
And I'm like, do they realize the Patriots have given up 180 yards rushing in the last three or four games? And they're throwing the ball. And it was such piss poor game planning by the Jets. It made Jerod Mayo look like Bill Belichick.
I totally, totally agree. I mean, I was sitting there, look, if any of you guys out there were Breece Hall fantasy owners like myself, you're sitting there pulling your hair out going, why isn't this guy running for 200 yards and two touchdowns today? And I couldn't figure it out, but it was just a really poor game plan by the Jets, just from top to bottom. Everything just looked unorganized and just out of place, out of sorts.
Yeah, absolutely. And say what you will today, but right now, Justin, the Jets with Aaron Rodgers this year are worse than they were last year with Zach Wilson. If the season ended today, they would be drafting 4, which is one spot behind the Patriots. And I don't know if you agree with this, but I think the Jets are further away from the championship than the Patriots. I think the Patriots as a franchise are actually in a much better position right now than the New York Jets. If you're the Jets, you're thinking about names like Quinn Ewers and Shedeur Sanders and Cam Akers. You haven't even gotten there yet. And I think their rebuild actually starts this January for that franchise. They have to go back to square one, back to the drawing board. So I think the Jets are much worse off as a franchise right now than even the Patriots are.
Oh, I agree completely. They're behind us in terms of rebuilding. And they're not going to go anywhere with their current roster. So yeah, I totally agree.
Well, it was sweet to watch. We can agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Patriots coaching staff. You know what, Justin? Before we do that, let's change it up. We'll finish up a little more about the Pats in a sec. Let's get to the non-football topic of the week. Are you ready for the always exciting, interesting, and entertaining non-football topic of the week?
I am ready. Let's do it.
All right. Well, actually, we're going to talk this week about dog walkers, right?
Yeah.
So what is the dog walking is like a whole phenomenon. I have two dogs. I think you're allergic to dogs, so you can't have a dog.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
But you observe dogs.
I observe dogs. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And dog walking is like a strange thing because, you know, there's this whole, like, first of all, there's this whole culture of like Karenism around it. Like, you can't do certain things with your dog. Like, God forbid, you have to clean up the poop. Right? You can't walk in certain places. The dog has to be on a leash. There's all these places and opportunities for people to like chirp at you if you don't do it right.
Yeah.
What is the strangest dog walking thing or strangest thing about dog walkers in your opinion?
All right. I got to say this is a personal one for me because I'm somebody, I go for a lot of jogs. I go for a lot of runs. Pass a ton of dog walkers over the course of that. I think it's if you know you have an aggressive dog, if you know you have a dog that you need to monitor very carefully when you take him out in public on walks, why in the hell are you giving him enough slack on that leash that he can get clear across the other side of like a sidewalk or like a walkway? Like, you need, like, if I'm running by you and I'm purposely trying to, you know, hop off the other side of the curb or something to give you enough berth, enough space to get by, and your dog is still able to lunge and get to me, That's an issue that I got. It happened to me actually a few months ago. I was running and this dog, luckily it got a hold of the shirt and not the the meat of my torso, but it tore a shirt right off my freaking body.
The dog actually tore the shirt.
The dog tore the shirt.
The dog bit your shirt.
The dog bit the shirt. It came right for the ribs. I had a loose t-shirt on. It bit the shirt, tore it right off my body. And the girl is looking at me shocked. And I'm thinking to myself, what? I was 10 feet away from you when that dog lunged at me. Why didn't you see me coming and tighten up the slack on that leash and make sure that thing couldn't get away from you?
Well, I have to ask, what kind of dog was it?
I'd be lying if I said I knew, but it looked aggressive.
Was it a big dog or a little dog?
It was a bigger dog. It was a bigger dog, yeah.
So it would have hurt.
Oh, yeah. That would have hurt for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The problem with dogs, Justin, is like 99.9% of the time is the owner.
It is.
And people like get really butthurt and sensitive about their dogs in a way that is hard to understand. Kind of like with their kids. Like some people just don't want to admit that their kids you have parents out there that their kid could literally set a school on fire and they'll be like defending.
Yeah.
Oh, Junior couldn't have done. No. I mean, well, you know, like all this stuff. No, it couldn't have been him. It's the same thing with dogs. Like people don't want to discipline their dogs. They don't want to punish their dogs. Mm-hmm. They don't want to control their dogs. And that's how you get that kind of behavior.
I totally, totally agree. Yeah, it's not, it takes effort to be a good dog owner.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I have a story from dog walking recently, and it is, you know, I wasn't my dogs. I was in my front yard this week, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the worst things when you walk your dog in your neighborhood, obviously, you have to clean the poop. And people, for some reason, and I don't understand this, get really sensitive about other dog owners throwing bags of poop in their barrels. Like I've heard and seen stories of people either on social media calling people out because they put their dog poop in their barrel, which I think is nuts. Like, you know,
it's a
put
barrel.
Your poop in the barrel. It's a barrel. What are you getting all sensitive and territorial about it? So I see this lady walking up the street, walking her dog, and the dog takes a dump on my neighbor's lawn.
Yeah.
And you know, she gets her bag out, she's picking up, doing the right thing, and she's walking down now with the little dump in the bag. And I say, hey, would you like to put your poop in my barrel? You know, it's right there, literally right in my front yard, because it was trash day that day. And she declined. And I'm like, wait, you don't want to throw your shit away? You want to carry your dog's feces for 1 second longer than you have to? I thought that was just one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
So wild. So I like, what did she think? It was like a setup? What was the catch?
Yeah. What's the downside to throwing your shit in my barrel?
None.
Is my barrel not good enough for her?
You know what? You should have asked her. You should have been like, what's the deal? What gives? Is my barrel not good enough? Are you saving that for later? What's going on here?
Yeah, I just like, I emerged with like, I was confused. I was shocked. I couldn't make sense of the whole thing. Like, this is like, it was really an insult, I feel like, to me and my whole family.
Yeah, that was total ultimate sign of disrespect. You're not good enough to throw the poop away. I mean, geez.
Yeah, and she's got, I mean, who wants to walk with a bag of dog shit in their hands? I just didn't understand it, man. No. All right, let's move on. Anything else about dog walking you want to add?
No, I think that about does it.
One more. What are you going to be for Halloween?
I am a sushi chef.
The sushi chef. You mentioned that last time, I think.
Yeah. I got the costume and everything. Alyssa's my my sous chef. She's got the outfit too. So.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that'll be good. Yeah, so we went to a party this weekend. And I had my wok, you know, my Japanese the sushi chef, and I just put a bunch of nips in the wok, and you know, walking around the party, passing out the
that's
nips
awesome.
And stuff.
That
but yeah, nothing too crazy, simple, random, just how I like it. I think a good Halloween costume is like randomly funny. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like something that you look at and you say, "Oh, what the hell is that? How do you even think to do something stupid like that?" You know.
Absolutely. And I think the sushi chef is random enough that in of itself alone, people will see it and they will just laugh at it just because it's not the kind of costume you would see every day.
No, exactly. And that was the
every
whole
year. Yeah. All right, brother, let's finish out talking about this game. A couple more things I want to bring up, and then we're going to take a look ahead to the Titans. The last thing I want to talk about really before we get to the Tennessee game that we haven't mentioned yet is Jerod Mayo. We talked a lot last week, Justin, about him calling the team soft. and whether that was a huge mistake. I clearly felt very strongly that it was. I think you kind of agreed with me.
Yeah.
The team seemed to respond this week. And I thought this week was a huge litmus test for this team. I really did. I thought if they didn't come out and play hard, if they actually played soft again and they got blown out, I think that would have spoke so loudly about the dysfunction and the way that team feels about their coach. They came out and were the opposite. They played as hard as they had since week one. They hit, they played physical, they were resilient, they were tough. It was more like what I expected from this team all year. It was more like what we saw in Cincinnati. Was Gerard Mayo right to call this team soft now, Justin?
Well, it's tough to say that he was right to call them soft, because I didn't think softness was a problem that they really had, if I'm being completely honest. So, like, I don't know if him calling him soft, quote unquote, fixed the problem, or if they were going to come out and play hard regardless, because that hasn't been a huge issue for them. So let's put it this way. I don't know if it was the right move. It didn't backfire like we thought it could potentially.
It didn't backfire, but if you're also being honest, I mean, that was like, we were texting during the game and we were saying, this looks like a different Patriots team than the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
Yep.
And, you know, like, it's just like, what was the difference? If anything, they've had more injuries since a few weeks ago.
Yep.
Somehow they weren't playing hard for a few of those games, the Jets, San Francisco, or as hard as they played yesterday. And you're like, what was it that motivated them to finally come out and play like they should play?
And maybe it was that comment, you know, and look, if that's the case, then great, because that tells me that he has the respect and command of the locker room where he can show them tough love and he can criticize them and he can maybe make some controversial comments and they'll respond in that right way. Like, that's really what it comes down. Like, when you talk about was his comments appropriate or not, that, again, that's something that is all relative when you put it into perspective. Like, if the team responds positively to it, then it was the right thing to say. And that doesn't, you know, that's not a cookie cutter situation. You go from coach to coach, locker room to locker room, team to team. The same, you know, what gets said in one locker room doesn't always translate in another locker room. So it really just depends on whether the team responded favorably to it. And it looked like they did. So I was really glad to see it.
There's no question the team responded favorably, and I'm shocked by that. I really am. I thought he really made a huge error in judgment by calling his own team out, and I think that, you know, for whatever reason, he was right, and maybe we were all wrong.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm sure the message to them was like, look, you know, we've lost a lot of guys to injury. We have a rookie quarterback. We're in the middle of a rebuild. Let's not let the effort in the tenacity be the reason why we lose any games, you know? Right. And I think that's a message that I think any team can get behind, which is like, hey, we might not be the best team in the world, but we're not going to lose because we're playing soft. And I think, you know, and I think they bought into that.
Absolutely. You know, here's my take right now on Mayo, Justin. And I know that was a great win on Sunday. I definitely think you're seeing signs of development of him maybe improving a little bit on Sunday. And I think you see a lot of his good traits. I think he has a lot of good traits,
right,
but I'm still super concerned about the guy because I just don't think he has a ton of experience. And I want to just encourage people to remember, yeah, everything looked better against the Jets Sunday, but at the same time, they were going against a coaching staff that somehow arguably was less experienced, less qualified than they were. And that's not going to happen every week. That might have been the one case where Mayo actually had the advantage in terms of acumen and experience over the coach on the other sideline. So maybe that is one of the reasons why it looked a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps, I guess. I like you said earlier, you're not going to get too many situations where Gerard Mayo has the upper hand in terms of experience or anything like that. So it was nice to at least see, though, again, like, expectations, he looked better than the other coach, which he should have.
And it was nice to see the Patriots respond.
Yes. Yeah.
That was the hugest thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And one last thing about this game, and then we're going to take a quick look at Tennessee, and then we're going to move on. This wide receiver room, Justin, what are they going to do with these wide receivers? Now, you had said a couple weeks ago that you are not concerned about these wide receivers, and then they've proceeded to rattle off like 14 days of just pure embarrassment, both on and off the field. So I want to ask you if you're revisiting that take. There was a point in the game Sunday where the wide receiver group had 4 catches and 4 drops. So where are you on the receiver room now?
I look at them and I think this is a young developing group. You know, you got Kendrick Bourne coming off of injuries. Everybody else is either a first or second year guy. I'm not worried in the sense that I think in the long run, I think that a couple of these guys are going to develop into real serviceable receivers. I don't think any of them are number ones yet. I don't think we really have a true number one, but I think we have a decent locker room or decent wide receiver room that's going to get a little bit better. But to your point, they certainly have their flaws. And it shows.
Who on this team are you convinced is actually going to be a developmental piece?
I'm pretty convinced. I think DeMario Douglas has the physical skills, right? You know, that speed, the agility, the quickness. That's something that's just a physical gift. Not a lot of people, you know, have that. I love what I'm seeing out of Kayshon Booty. I think his kind of resurgence in year two is pretty encouraging. And I've always liked Kendrick Bourne as like a serviceable 2 or 3 guy. So I think there's more development that needs to happen. And I don't think I don't think any of these guys are wide receiver ones. But I think they'll continue to get better.
I'm not convinced right now, Justin, that there is even one guy on this team that is a receiver that will be here in 2 seasons.
Interesting.
And I think that of the guys on this roster, I would definitely say that that Pop Douglas is the one that is the most likely to stick. But even him, he disappeared in each of the last 2 games after making early plays. You know, Kendrick Bourne has done nothing. Tyquan Thornton is a total non-starter. He is not long for this team. I'm surprised he's still here. I haven't seen anything from Jalen Polk or Javon Walker. And then KJ Osborne is obviously just a one and done. He's not a foundational piece at all. Right. So I actually am growing more concerned about what I see from these receivers. And I think when you have a good quarterback in there and a guy that can actually get them the ball, which we have now with Drake May, I think it really exacerbates and shows you how bad some of these guys are. I mean, some of those drops are awful. That drop Tyquan Thornton had, the throw from Drake May, that was a terrific play by Drake May. Rolling out 40 yards downfield, puts it in your chest, and you drop it. I mean, come on, Tyquan Thornton. You haven't done anything in 3 years. I mean, could they make it much easier for you? I'm very concerned, Justin, about this receiver room and the future of it.
Well, I do think I think you still have 2 things that need to happen. I think you need to see serious growth and development from the guys that are in this wide receiver room. And I think you still need to add 1 or 2 pieces to it. But like I'm speaking to it from the standpoint that I think there's potential. I definitely think there's still holes and still things that need to happen, both in terms of growth and additions.
Yeah, I mean, like I think it's a given. We know there's not a number one receiver on this roster. But if you're the Patriots, you know you're trying to develop one of these guys into a 2 or 3.
Right.
I mean, that would be a huge win if you could even get there by the end of this year.
I agree.
And one other little point, Justin, Ladd McConkey, out of Georgia, now with the LA Chargers, 2 touchdowns this week.
Yeah.
Playing with Justin Herbert, we said at the time at our draft podcast. Huge mistake. The Patriots had that pick and traded it to the Chargers so they could take Ladd McConkey. Who would you rather have right now, Ladd McConkey or Jalen Point? That was a big, big mistake by Elliott Wolf.
Big mistake. And refresh my memory. How did that manifest? Like what actually wound up coming from the trade down? Like what did we get in return for that?
I think they got like a 4th or 5th round pick or something to drop down. Probably
anybody meaningful though or noteworthy.
I'd have to look it up. I would have to look it up.
Because I mean, unless you took that capital when you traded down and turned it into somebody really promising. That just looks like such a stupid move.
It was a very stupid move. Like you look at what you're seeing for May and what McConkey's skill set is, and I think that would have been a terrific pairing.
Yeah. And you know, it brings the old phrase to mind, like, you can't pour from an empty glass. Like, what are the Patriots doing trading down in that situation when they had that many holes and that many glaring needs, especially at wide receiver? Like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
That,
you know? I mean, I hate to say it, but it was like, it was the kind of Belichickian move from Elliott Wolf. It's the kind of shit that Belichick was doing that was driving us all mental for the last few years, which is, you know, we're not going to take the big name player that we all know that comes from the great program and was a star in college. We're going to trade down 10 picks, pick up a late round draft pick, and draft some number two receiver that none of us have ever heard of because we think he's better.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just more of the same, but
Belichickian in every way.
Yeah.
All right, man. I think that's all the time we have. We're going to wrap up this edition of the Ultimate Patriots Dr. Football Podcast. You got any thoughts about the game this week in Tennessee, Justin?
I think it's probably going to be honestly, it's probably going to be an ugly game, I would imagine.
Yeah. If Brissett plays.
Exactly. Yeah. If you got a Jacoby Brissett and a Mason Rudolph, you know, squaring away, it's gonna be kind of ugly. One thing I did want to throw out there, we haven't talked much about it, is how do you feel about them shipping off Josh Uche to the Kansas City Chiefs?
I don't love it because I don't feel like they got anything back. I mean, what good is a 6th-round pick? You might as well keep the player.
I don't understand. You know, I heard people saying that like Josh Uche has been very good for the last few years. Like, he has been a good pass rusher, and you have a defense that is significantly hurt and altered right now in the front seven. Your defense in general is struggling, and you send a guy over to the Kansas City Chiefs, arguably the best team in the conference. Not only that, but it flies totally in the face of what I thought this new regime was going to be, which is draft and sign, retain talent, develop and retain talent. Like, what more could you want than somebody like Josh Uche, who's like hitting the prime of his career? You drafted him, you brought him in here, you're in the middle of a rebuild, you need defense. Like, how is that not a guy you give a little bit of contract money to? I don't know. That, to me, it surprised me. I'm not saying it's a maker break trade, but it shocked me a little bit.
My guess, Justin, is that there was something that happened behind closed doors, and either Uche didn't want to be here, or there was some off the field issue, or some he didn't get along with Mayo, or something like that, because I just don't think it made sense to push him out of there for a 6th-round pick.
I agree. They gave him away for pretty much nothing. So,
crazy. Okay. I think this will be a kind of a slugfest. I guess we have to see who's going to be playing quarterback first.
Yeah.
Because if it's Drake May, I think the Patriots will win this game.
I do too. Yeah.
If it's Jacoby Brissett, I think it becomes a 50-50 game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Must-see television, Mason Rudolph versus Jacoby Brissett. Oh. Appointment viewing.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That'll be tough. That'll be rough in the eyes for everybody.
I think I'm just going to watch old videos of, like, an old Brady Patriots game. I'm just going to pop it in at 1 o'clock and watch that instead and just pretend that it happened actually on Sunday. All right, brother, that's all the time we have. I want to wrap it up. Say thank you to everyone that listened to this edition of the podcast. Have a great week. Enjoy the game. We will catch you next week. Look for our Around the League podcast, which will drop sometime on Thursday, and stay in touch, everyone. We'll catch you next week.